Well, we're certainly thankful for everyone's presence this morning. It's good to see everybody out. It's good to be back. We appreciate being with you. Miss you. Miss being with this good group of people. If you have your New Testaments with you, you can turn to the 14th chapter of Matthew. We're going to read an account of a very familiar Bible story from the life of Jesus. Beginning in verse 22, immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. And while he sent the crowds away, after he had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind stopped, and those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "You are certainly God's Son." As I said, I am sure that we are very familiar with this story. It is one of the famous miracles of Jesus. It is one of the stories that we often look at when we are studying the life of Peter. Before we get into that, we, I think, need to talk about the background behind this event. Jesus had just concluded another visit to his hometown of Nazareth, and once again, the people there had rejected him. And so Jesus left there, and he had heard about the death of John the Baptist. John had been imprisoned by Herod. We know that story. And ultimately, he had been beheaded by Herod, and that news comes to Jesus. And so he leaves town and wants to go into the mountain to be away by himself for a period of seclusion. But that didn't really work out because the people realized he was leaving and they followed him. And that led to one of the great miracles of his ministry because he taught extensively to a large group of people that had followed him to the mountainside. And after he had finished that teaching, he fed them, and that was a total of 5,000 men, along with women and children. And after that miracle, he had dismissed the crowd. He had sent the disciples away across the Sea of Galilee in a boat. And he finally got that period of seclusion that he was seeking for his thoughts and for prayers. That's what set the stage for this event. And so basically we know what is said here, the story. There's a lot of local flavor to it. The Sea of Galilee was a lake, and it wasn't even a large lake compared to the Great Lakes or something like that. But it was a type of sea that was very subject to the winds coming out of the mountains and could move, change from being a very placid lake to a very stormy lake in a short period of time. And so, as happens here, Jesus sends them away in the evening, and it says that he comes to them on the fourth watch, and that would be between like 3 and 6 a.m. in the morning. And so they have spent most of their night and have not yet successfully crossed this small lake or sea. And he comes to them before dawn, walking across these stormy waters. And we are told that that initially terrifies the disciples. They do not realize what they are seeing. They had witnessed Jesus perform a number of miracles to this point in his ministry, But they evidently were totally unprepared for this as they see Jesus walking towards them on the water. But Jesus identifies himself to these servants and disciples and encourages them not to be afraid. And at this point, the focus of the story shifts to Peter from the rest of the disciples, because he asked the Lord, "If that's really you, tell me to come out to you on the water." And the Lord tells him to, and he begins to walk across the stormy sea towards Jesus. And because this story is so familiar, we all know the results of this. Peter leaves the boat. He begins walking towards Jesus. Matthew records in what we have read that Peter then begins to notice the winds and the waves. Now, he was certainly aware of them in some sense because they'd been in that boat trying to cross the Sea of Galilee all night. But evidently that didn't occur to him when he first hopped out of the boat and started walking. But now he's walking towards Jesus and he gets concerned about the winds and the waves and he begins to sink. And in his fright, he calls out for Jesus to save him. And Jesus reaches out his hand and does that. Jesus rebukes Peter for his lack of faith, but safely takes him back into the boat. And when Jesus enters that boat, the winds stop and the seas calm. And the disciples who were witnesses of this event and all that transpired in that evening, they again worship him. Now, I know we have heard in our lifetime many lessons preached on this passage. I know that I have used this passage as a text many times before. And often our sermons focus on Peter here. And they provide us valuable lessons. Those sermons are all valuable. Sermons that tell us the importance of our faith and the importance of having a strong faith. Purpose sermons that analyze the reasons that lead up to Jesus having to save Peter. And what was wrong with Peter that he failed in this sense and had to be rescued. But I want to go a little different route this morning. And the remainder of this lesson, and you may have picked it up on the title slide, I want to focus on the reason that Matthew gives for Peter beginning to sink. Matthew says he saw the wind and became frightened. That weakened his faith, and it brings Peter to this crisis where Jesus has to save him. We know the story. We know the story well. We know the many applications we've heard about Peter and about faith. But I want to turn this personally. And let's think for just a few minutes together about what is the wind in my life. Because when Peter saw the wind, got concerned about that, he began to fail. Now, I know and I understand the literalness of this story. Peter was literally distracted by the wind whipping up the sea. But I want to suggest to you that not all wind has to be literal wind. That in this sense, and when we ask this question, what is the wind in my life? What we are talking about are the things that we allow into our lives that can present us challenges that cause our faith to fail, our faith to become weak. And I'm going to suggest to you, for the sake of easy memory in this lesson, that those are going to be four D's, the letter D. Four things that we can begin with the letter D that can be the wind in our lives. And the first of these is our desires. One of the first things that can detract us and challenge us with our faith is our own personal desire. Now, it is personal, and that means that these desires can take different forms for different people. But the common thread is that these desires can cause us to lose focus on what is more important in our lives. It can be the desire to have a good time. It can be a desire to achieve things musically or athletically or economically. It may be hard for you to believe this, and I think I've told you about it before over the 40 years I've been here. But one of my best friends, in fact, one of the people I admired and desired to be like when I was a young man attending Florida College, left his faith. And what he told people that talked to him about it is that his goal was to become one of the world's most eminent linguists, and that had to be the focus of his life. Now, I don't know if he achieved that. I still know his brother fairly well. And the reason why I say I don't know if he achieved that is that he's a professor at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. And I don't know, from my human perspective, whether that position would qualify as becoming one of the world's eminent linguists. I would think that you would be at Oxford or Cambridge in England or Harvard or Yale. So I don't know whether the University of Alaska ever met his objective or not. But, and I don't mean to be negative about Alaska by any means. Cooper wouldn't have anything to do with me again if I degraded Alaska. He likes it up there. But, he just frankly said, this was what I'm pursuing. I've given up everything else to do that. That's not one I would have considered. But maybe you've considered something like that. But so often our desires are more along those common things. My career is the most important thing to me. Playing ball in college is the most important thing. Making the, I play golf regularly with a guy that's the first chair trumpet in the Dayton Philharmonic. And just yesterday at lunch, we were talking about that because I'd seen in the newspaper that the Cincinnati Symphony has a trumpeter retiring. And I said, are you going to go for that? And he said, no, my age, I'm as high up as I want to go at Dayton. That's not my goal in life anymore. Well, I didn't even have the goal to make first chair in the Waynesville marching band when I was a kid. I did trumpet for about 2 years. You were a trumpeter, weren't you, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cornet playing a cornet. Yeah. So anyway, the point of that is Solomon points out to us in Ecclesiastes that all these things that we have as our desires, even when we pursue them and we pursue them with intelligence and whatever, that they can turn out to be less than satisfying. But James points out that they may lead us to sin. James 1 and verse 13, excuse me. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. So one of the things that we deal with in life that can cause us to be distracted and lose our focus on serving Jesus and being his faithful disciple is those things we allow to be in our lives. And they may, in and of themselves, not be sinful. They could even be very wholesome. But we allow them to take our focus off of what our true goals should be. Well, the second one that I would talk about is that sometimes the wind in our lives comes from our doubt. And that really is the primary focus of the problem faced by Peter in this text. What happened to Peter from the time he so confidently stepped out of the boat saying, "I'm going to walk to Jesus," and till the crisis of faith happened? Evidently, the things with the wind and the waves caused him to say, "What am I doing? The boat's back there, and I'm out here." And we're fully aware that before he was called a disciple, Peter was a fisherman. So he knew what the sea was, and he knew what the danger was. And that caused him doubt. Now, I believe that our doubt in our lives can be motivated by one or two factors. Sometimes it's fear, and I think that may have been what was involved with Peter. He began to realize the danger that he had put himself in. And the other is the uncertainties of life. What things we don't control, and we don't even know what's going to happen from one day to the next. And the world in which we live as Christians certainly provides us plenty of opportunity for both. We live in a world that generally rejects God and ignores His will. Paul says about our world in 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 18 that the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. It's a world that is perishing, but it is a world that also rejects the only true wisdom that can be of any help to us, and that's the gospel. And Christians of all ages are constantly bombarded with challenges to their faith. And that faith can lead us to question what it is that we believe. If we stand firm in that faith, that can lead us to be persecuted by unbelievers, which can then create physical or emotional fear, which also can challenge us. And so doubt is a real problem. And I think we see in the lives of the apostles, particularly in Peter, that even the strongest of the Lord's disciples are not free from the problems of doubt. The New Testament has much to say about that. James 1 and verse 6 says, "But we must ask in faith without doubting. For the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by wind. For that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways." James says doubt leads to spiritual issues, to spiritual problems. And one of the things that I think we sometimes miss in our concerns about other things, about the mission of the church, is one of the key missions of the church and why we should want to value being together with the church, even as we're gathered here this morning, is that one of the functions that God gave the church is to strengthen the Christian, to equip them to overcome such fear or doubt. We read this passage all the time, and I sometimes think we miss this point when we read it. Ephesians 3 and verse 13, where he's talked about that God gave the church apostles and prophets and evangelists and teachers and elders for the building up of the body of Christ. Verse 13 says, "Until we attain the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ, and as a result, we are no longer children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by the craftiness and deceitful schemings." One of the purposes we are supposed to accomplish for each other in this family of God is the encouragement and the strengthening and the allaying of one another's doubts. It helps to be told you are believing the right thing, you are doing the right thing, you are focusing your life where it needs to be, and to receive the encouragement from others that that is the way you should be living your life. Each one of us has the responsibility to help each other overcome the problems of fear and doubt. The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews 3 and verse 12, "Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." You know, sometimes we develop the wrong attitude about those who need to be encouraged. I believe in inspiration. So I believe that when the Holy Spirit inspired the writer of Hebrews to say these words and tell us that we are to encourage one another, it is because he is telling us we all need encouragement. That there is not a single one of us in the assembly this morning that doesn't have periods where fear or doubt challenge us, when we are not as strong as we ought to be. And that our purpose together is not to ridicule or to make those things worse. Our purpose together is to encourage and strengthen one another, because God knows we need it. Thus, we need to overcome doubt. Well, the third thing that it could be the wind in my life are difficulties. You know, Jesus never promised his disciples that Christianity was a panacea where there were no difficulties. He never taught them that if you become a Christian, I guarantee you a trouble-free life. In fact, it is the opposite. He anticipated that such problems would come, and he even warned that such problems could lead some to turn their back on him. In one of his most familiar teachings, the parable of the sower and the soils, in Matthew 13, he describes the seed that has fallen into rocky places. He says in verse 20, "This is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no firm root in himself, but it is only temporary, and when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away." Jesus said some are going to be like that. That is just a spiritual fact of life. Those challenges will come. And the promise of the gospel and the promise of Jesus is not that if you follow him, you will avoid difficulties in your life, but that if you follow him, you can overcome those difficulties and become even stronger in your life. Passage we'll look at in more detail in our early service in my study of 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter 1 and verse 6. "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." Difficulties will come. There are some in this audience who have been tested by the difficulties of personal illness. Some of our members are very struggling with those things. Others of us are starting to feel the difficulties that come simply because our bodies are getting older and are wearing out. And that is by the design of God. He never intended for us to live here forever. He has a better place for us. But Paul so beautifully describes that in 2 Corinthians, that as we face those difficulties, what it should create in us is a desire to be free of those and to live with him. There's difficulties with family and with friends. Difficulties with life itself. that this is not a perfect world. It was created perfect, but just damaged by sin. And sin continues to have its effect in this world, and we are affected by that, and those that we love are affected by that. And I know that I'm speaking to a group of people that have all experienced that in some way or another and are dealing with it right now. And that can challenge your faith. And I have known people in my lifetime that have just given up, saying, I can't take this anymore. But you know, that's not what Peter says. Peter gives us a promise in 1 Peter 5 and verse 10. After you have suffered for a little while, the God of all grace who called you to his eternal glory in Christ will himself perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. If we meet our difficulties and we keep our faith, yes, they can be a challenge to our faith. But Peter says, if you persevere, God will give you the solution to that. And then the result will be that your faith will be stronger. Then the final one, my time is past gone, so I will finish here. Is that sometimes the wind in our life is just simply that we get distracted. And that was certainly a factor with our story of Peter. If he had kept his eye on Jesus, in that one of the sermons that we preach out of this passage, if he had kept his eye on Jesus and not been looking at the winds and the waves, he wouldn't have realized the threat that they were. So Peter allowed himself to be distracted by what was going on around him. And we live in a world that can distract. And cause us to think that everything else going on around us is more important than the one thing that really matters. Jesus anticipated that problem also in his great parable of the sower and the soils. In Matthew 13 and verse 22, he said that the one whose seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word and it becomes unfruitful. He says distraction from your spiritual purpose can cost you your soul. Some worldly distractions may not be sinful in and of themselves. Others may not be inherently sinful, but their accumulation in our lives and our focus on them has the effect, Jesus says, of choking out our spiritual interest. And our interest becomes in things of this world rather than on becoming the Christ-like person that we ought to be. And the greatest problem with that, John says in 1 John in a very familiar passage, is that all these things of the world are temporary. And we need to be focused on the eternal. John says in 1 John 2 and verse 15, do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eye and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away and also its lust. But the one who does the will of God lives forever. So understand, those things of the world can distract us to the point of sin. But theoretically, even if they did not distract us to the point of sin, their long-term value is that they're limited. These things will pass away. But our souls will return to God. And it's those who do the will of God, John says, who live forever. Christians are to have a different priority, but that priority is always challenged by the distracting things of the world But Paul tells us in Romans 12 and verse 2 to not be conformed to this world, but to be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. And so our distractions can become a challenge to our faith. But as I've said, these are all personal. So what may be the problem to me may not be the problem to you. So the issue is personal. And I challenge each one of us. We need to identify what the win factors are in our life. What is it that can challenge our faith and cause us to come to a crisis of faith like Peter had on that sea that day? The more we allow the things that we have discussed to occupy our thinking, the greater threat is that they will lead us away from Christ. May we do what Peter ultimately had to do. Cry out, "Lord, save me." That's the only solution. If you're in the audience this morning and you've never made that cry to Him, you've never called out to Him, you've never obeyed the gospel and accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior, He is ready to deal with that, to deal with your desires and your doubts, your distractions, your difficulties. If you put your faith in Him, and we invite you to do that, we invite you to come. While we stand and while we sing.